Okay, so we are in the seventh episode of From the Ganga to Himalaya, and today I have like special guest, which is Kiran Mutal. He will speak. He will introduce himself in a few seconds, and our current episode will talk about the Ganvapi Mosque and the Vishveshnath Temple. So before we start, it's like a hot story, but not so hot because it's always things happen. Please, Kiran, introduce yourself to our audience.
Yes, so thank you, Shimrit, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
And I'm very happy because you are one of the very few people who pronounced my name correctly, my last name correctly. And because Indian people also mess up my last name, so I'm very happy for that.
Thank you for the honor.
I was born in India. I lived in India till I was 22. I did my undergrad bachelor's of engineering from India. And then I went to America for my master's. I studied master's in finance, specializing in finance. I worked on a few banks on Wall Street. Then I worked in one of the big four. I'm a management consultant by profession. And my job brought me to Amsterdam, and I'm living in Amsterdam for the last 2 years. And that's my professional life. Personally, I'm very, very intrigued by what's happening in history and politics. So I went to India this year, early this year in January, I decided to take some time and visit Kashi and Mathura, Kashi and Ayodhya. And I spent more than a week, 10 days in Kashi and Ayodhya. So I was very interested in this topic, and that's the reason we got connected. I'm very happy to be here speaking about the same topic that I really like.
Yeah, you saw it in your own eyes.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk. I mean, what in the first place, like, provoke this current issue? I know that, I mean, like, from technical point of view, like the petition of five women to pray on that site provoke all the things, but like it was supposed to be like a closed story after the Ayodhya ruling, and nothing new should not came up. So what happened now that like from the petition in August 2021?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So if you go back in history, Shimrit, Ayodhya issue, you know, that was in court for last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the Kashi issue is not also very new to court. First petition in Kashi Vishwanath case or Ganvapi case was filed in 1991, which is 30 years back.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an additional case that was filed last year where five women requested an access to worship few goddess or deities which are in the Ganvapi mosque. Now, frankly, if you ask me, these are the regular court cases. People go to court gives an order, and then they follow on that. When I visited Kashi, I also saw there's a huge, huge police presence. You will see cops on not 5, but 10 and 15 feet. You, when you're walking, you can't miss from the eyes of cops for every meter. So that there is a so heavy presence of police in Kashi. And I asked police, why there is so much heavy presence? Is it Prime Minister Modi's constituency? It's his home city? Or is it because of the Kashi Vishwanath? And they said, this presence is here since 1992, when Ayodhya happened, when Babri Mosque was demolished. They also added additional layer of security for the Ganvapi and Kashi Vishwanath. So these things are not new. This thing is happening. There is security presence, the court cases that are happening for last 30 years. What had changed is the media narratives. How media plays a role, right? And I think this is blown out of the proportion at this point of time.
Yeah, maybe it has. I mean, I agree with you that like there is like a narrative about Modi that he is like a bit anti-Muslim, and he is leading like a legislation against Muslim, and we'll talk about it later. but still it is a bit surprising that the case was accepted by the court, because besides Ayodhya that like has like had an exception of the law from 1991, nothing should be opened. So it is surprising why the court agreed to open and to hear this case.
Yeah, so
to even hear law, the case.
Yeah, so law is something I enjoy because I have studied law along mm-hmm. with my engineering. And okay. I always like to talk about law, because law is something that you can interpret in multiple directions. It's like a poem. So a poem can have 10 different meanings. A law also can be interpreted in a different settings. One of the provision in 1991 Places of Worship Act says that if that place of worship is more than 100 years old, it will be exempt from the law. Then there are also provisions about how you want to interpret the current structure. So that is something court has to interpret. And in order to interpret, first they need to admit the case. So it's court, in order to have a due legal process, court has admitted the case. It will hear both sides, perform its own due diligence. And one of the form of due diligence is court order a video recording of Gyanvapi Mosque.
Yeah, what I'm saying, sorry to interrupt you, that this loophole of the historical monument or archaeological site to the law from 1991, a few people knew, most of the people was in the notion that beside the exception of Ayodhya, no new exception will be accepted. So the fact that the court accepted the right to the petition, even the right to stand before them, it is surprising a bit.
Yes, but it's one of the provision in law, right? So
yes,
ignorance is not the excuse. That's one of the basic principle of law. So yes. People didn't know. It's not the excuse that they can provide.
Okay, so let's continue. So the court decided to do a videograph of the site, and I found shivling, and I mean I know that Kashi Varanasi has a great importance to the Hindus, but what's the importance of the shivling? Why it's so unique? What is, I mean, it rose a lot of excitement when they found the shivling.
Yes, so I'll address your question in two parts. First is when court ordered videography, I visited Kashi and I saw Kashi Vishwanath Mandir and also saw Gyanvapi. So Gyanvapi is knowledge. It's a Sanskrit word or Hindi word derived from Sanskrit. It's knowledge, and Vapi means a well.
Well, knowledge.
Right? No, well of knowledge, right? That's not an Arabic word. That's not even an Urdu word. That's a Sanskrit word. So you won't have a Sanskrit name for a mosque. That's the first thing. Second, when you look at the mosque, you don't need an archaeologist to tell you that there was a temple before and now it's a mosque. You can see it from your eyes that, yeah, there are deities. There are Hindu gods on the wall of mosque. So you know, no one who is building a mosque will paint and carve Hindu gods on the mosque. So that's the second evidence. So yes. We had first literally, second the architectural, and third important thing about the shivling is when I visited Kashi Vishwanath, Shiva is always, you see Shiva in the combination. So Shiva is surrounded by different animals. So one of the animals is snake, which is on his neck, but he also has a vehicle, which is bull. So Shiva's vehicle is bull, and that bull always faces Shivlinga, because then that bull takes order from Shiva. In Kashi Vishwanath, you have Shivlinga. In Kashi Vishwanath, current Kashi Vishwanath Mandir, you have Shivlinga, but the bull is facing opposite direction, and it's facing in the direction of masjid or mosque. So when, and people always wondered, right? When every temple in the world, when bull faces Shivlinga, only in this temple, why bull is facing mosque? And when they found Shivlinga in the mosque, everyone realized. So bull has correct direction. It's not the wrong direction. So then it was...
The mystery has resolved.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know, you said something about the name, about the Jivanapi, that it's a well of wisdom. It reminds me after India got its independence from Britain, it changed the name of few city. It changed the name of Bombay to Mumbai, Calcutta to Kolkata to Calcutta, and so on. And it's like it's remind me the same. I mean, it's obvious that like things were different in the past. That they have like different history, like even in the Jivanapi Mosque. I mean, Akbar rebuilt it or allowed to rebuild it, and Aurangzeb destroyed it. So I mean, like, and everything is part of the large part of history, and it's where do you want to look at in what point of time? Because you can look at it in every point of time, like. Why is like the name of Mumbai is more fit than to say Bombay?
It's not the name being fit, right? So Mumbai was there even before British came.
Yes.
But Indian names were so difficult that British had problems in calling out or pronouncing these names. So Mumbai became Bombay, and Kolkata became Calcutta, and Madras became Chennai. Or Chennai became Madras. So they had a hard time in saying Indian names. So they created their own names. But these cities still had their old names. So it's not changing the names by Indian government. It's just using the old names that were modified by British because they couldn't say the correct name. The other part is with the Mughals. Mughals also changed few names of the cities, like Prayagraj, which is also a supreme importance for Hindus, was changed to Allahabad. And then after 300-400 years, it was brought back to its own name. So it's not changing the name, it's just restoring the old name. And I'll put that in context for you, right? So Jewish diaspora spoke Hebrew when they were in Israel, but when diaspora happened, they adopted the local language. So Sephardic Jews spoke different, and Maghrebi Jews spoke different language, and Jews in India, when Israelis spoke Marathi, as I speak. But then when everyone went to Israel, Israel adopted a common language, which is the language of their forefathers. So it's the same, I use the same analogy. Mm-hmm. We are just restoring what was there and what was lost in the meantime.
But the restoration is like a bit like ambiguous idea, because like the thing is, what's the final destination of the Hindus that want to restore to the past? Like you know, like there is 22 secret rooms in the Taj Mahal that was not allowed to be opened by court. Also, a history of temple in Qutb Minar. From the other hand, like there are three mosques who became temple after the partition in Haryana, in Hisar. I mean, what is the destination? Is it? I mean, like it's splendid. Like places that were. A mosque became a temple, and few like really important places like Qutb Minar or Taj Mahal are like Mughal sites. So and there are places that India is very proud of it, and its major part of its tourism is come specific to see there. So what is the purpose, the final purpose of this movement? Yeah. To restore everything.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you the very basic difference between temple became mosque and mosque became temple, right? So I know the example you mentioned about the Hisar, which mosque became temple. But that was because local Muslim population who was worshipping in that mosque went to Pakistan and that mosque was abandoned. So it became temple.
But
so
you could say it. You could say it also about Ganapati when Aurangzeb ruled the place. Maybe he took off all the Hindu population from the site, and he says, "Okay, yeah. I will dedicate it for the Muslim."
Yes. So that's the basic difference, where the temples became mosque, were forcefully converted by Aurangzeb's order, and it's a because it demolished. The mosque, demolished the temple and built a mosque on top of it. While mosque that became temple did not change its structure. They're still there. So that's the very basic difference. Then coming back to your question about Taj Mahal, right?
Taj Mahal, Qutub Minar.
Qutub Minar, right? So, I don't see there is a controversy there. There is a structure. It's a common heritage. Mughals came to India, they came from Central Asia, so they built new things, they modified few things that were already in India, and they took inspiration from the already things that, because India had a history of building grand temples from 1500 to 2000 years. There are few temples in South India, they are 2000 years old, right? So there were already structures, so Mughal also took inspiration from that. So there might be few things you can see in Taj Mahal and there is a controversy, oh, this is a Hindu temple, but unless there is a concrete evidence, I cannot say that, or any historian will not say that. It's not as visible as you say in Ganapati Mosque, right? In Ganapati Mosque, you don't need an archaeologist to say that.
It's visible, but like in Qutub Minar, it's more apparent that it was that part of it was a Hindu temple.
It is up to the interpretations, right? So, and then, see, ultimately, the larger question is, where do we want to reach with this? Do we want to reach to making everything Hindu or everything Muslim? No, that's not the purpose of what we want to do. We have to understand that current Indian society is of everyone.
Okay.
The current Indian society is of everyone. So the Hindus in current India are not responsible for what happened 400 years back. And the same way, Muslims in current India have no relation to what happened in 400 years back. But all of them should understand that everything is a part of our common heritage. Whatever is Hindus' history is also Indian Muslims' history, those who are living in India.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm not sure that the Muslims see it as peacefully as you introduced that.
I'll give you a very simple example. Indian population was 150 million in 16th century. World population was 500 million. So Indian population was one third of the world population. Now, when Mughals came, they came in few thousands. Not even 100,000s, only few thousands. And they ruled India. So when you look at few thousands versus 150 billion, they have not, it's mathematically and scientifically not possible that the current Muslims of India are descendant of Mughals who came from outside. They have same past, same ancestors, and might be same religion few generations back as me.
Yeah, but
so
this is...
I think it's more about acknowledging that whatever happened in history is wrong, accepting that, and go ahead in a coherent manner.
If we take your example, it gives like the right explanation to the other point of view. Because what it's saying basically that maybe in the past, like the people that now are Muslim was originally Hindus, but today they are not, and they will not be converted to be Hindus in the origin. Now they are Muslim and they have like places that are important to them as present, which are not important to the Hindus, which are mosques and masjid. So what I'm trying to say is, like, when we're going back to history, it's like some sort to, like, to erase what happened from that point of time to now. Now they are Muslim, now they have mosque, now they have masjid. And when we want to return to the past, in some aspect, we hurt, like, in their heritage, their culture, their religious rights.
So I was recently reading a survey about what people want in Uttar Pradesh. Mm-hmm. Do people want a mandir or a temple? Yes, people want a temple, right? Majority of Hindu want a temple. But do they want by demolishing the current mosque? No. They don't want it because they know that any communal tension in society will affect everything. It will affect peace. Then in terms, it will affect schools, colleges, businesses, money, and harmony that is happening. And that gives a long-term impact. What is important, it's not the whitewashing of the history. So first we should acknowledge that Aurangzeb was bad. He has written orders about demolishing temples. He has written orders about stopping the music. He has a written order about putting a specific tax on Hindus only because they are Hindus. So he performed a localized genocides. He performed very horrific atrocities on Indian population. So, but calling Aurangzeb as a great king is something that is not acceptable. So what people want is accept that whatever happened in past 400 years, Aurangzeb gave an order to demolish the temple is wrong. Do not whitewash, yes, there is no Aurangzeb was great, right? Second thing, when Shivlinga was found in temple, acknowledge that there is a Shivlinga and we will find a common way to go further from there.
But so you know what? But let's take, like, the Ayodhya case. I mean, you talk about let's find a common way. The Hindus do not want to destruct places, but only to give, like, a place to worship, like the original religious places that have, like, religious importance. But still, like, the court rules after he did not succeed to took the side to solve the disagreement between them. What his decision was to destroy, and it was, like, really surprising decision to destroy the Berber message and to build, like, a Hindu message on it and to give the Muslim, like, a partner to build their own mosque. This kind of decision, it's not like an example to the spirit that you said, like, not to destroy the mosque or the masjid, but to give in a parallel way also the Hindus a place to worship their god or the religious practice. It didn't happen like in Ayodhya.
Yes, I agree with that. And then I think court accepted a Hindu belief that Ram was born at that place and then built a judgment on that. Now, and I'm quoting court, I'm not court verdict, I'm not calling it by myself. So, but I think whatever happened has happened. What I say now is, with the Indian community and government and society, we have a 70 years of court battle experience for Ayodhya. We have 30 years of court battle experience for Kashi, Gyanvapi. And then we have an extreme 30 years of out-of-court settlement experience and government-led mediator experience and community leader negotiation experience from Ayodhya. Now, if you look at it, near Ayodhya, there is a grand mosque been built on a different land. And Hindu temple is also being built. So, with the entire set of experience and different type of mechanisms that were used in the entire Ayodhya scenario, Indian community can derive all the best practices from all different mechanisms and see what worked best at various places and create a new mechanism that can be applied for Kashi Vishwanath.
Okay, let's talk a bit about politics.
Yes.
Now, the common narrative about Modi is like he's trying to rouse like the religious tension, or not that he's trying to rouse, that he doesn't care from the Muslim feelings. Like the BJP regime is taking like a different stance from the Congress party, and is like making emphasis on the religious religious point of view, like of the Hindus. Like it gives like, I don't know, like a hidden support of the Hindutva. Like Modi itself went to Ayodhya to put the milestone, and Modi went to Kashi to celebrate the corridor celebration and opening. Like the Modi is making like a stand that this religious issue has like great importance, while you know the Congress party tried to be very silent on this subject. So it's not only like historic and religious kind of matter, it's also like a very political subject.
Okay, so Modi, about Ayodhya and Kashi both, Modi's involvement there. So Modi, though he's a prime minister, he went to Ayodhya only after court verdict was issued on the favor of Hindus building a mandir. And so he followed the court. He did not violate the court verdict. He actually followed the court verdict when there was a mandir built, and he went for the milestone. Second okay. important part is Modi went to Kashi Vishwanath because you have seen Kashi Vishwanath few years back, and I have seen Kashi now. Kashi had changed tremendously, and Modi is elected member of parliament from Kashi. So that's Modi's home. So that's Modi's primary responsibility. If he doesn't do a good job there, or if he doesn't go there for any new thing happening, then he's just shying away from his responsibility. So that is the basic thing what he did. So I'm not defending Modi as much as I would like to defend him, but I don't need to defend him. I'm just trying to state the facts that what Modi did in Ayodhya was completely following the court order, and what Modi doing in Kashi is just taking care of his own constituency.
But you're giving him a bit of discount because, you know, under the BJP, like the court hear every day the pleas, which he didn't do in the past. And also he had a bit courage, I have to say, to establish like historical fact that like the Ayodhya was the place of birth of Ram. I mean, what I'm trying to say that although the court rules and the court establish what will happen, even in Ganvapi, that there was like a videograph, and in Ayodhya, but still the politics get into it of the court, because in the past the court didn't hear the petition every day, or even like, I don't know if he had like courage to establish that kind of thing, which is like a religious or, I don't know, historical effect that Ayodhya is the birth of Ram.
So that is something really interesting. And I would give that, appreciation to Modi for sure, because he has demonstrated a political will to take decisions. In the history of last 70 years in India, there were numerous issues which were pending. And they were pending because no decision on them were taken. So there was an open, and Modi is acting as a Mr. Closure to most of the difficult questions that were asked in India. And I'm going to digress for a minute, but there was an open international border issue with Bangladesh for last 50 years. That has been solved in Modi's tenure. There was a Muslim women's alimony issue. After the divorce, they were not getting alimony. So they were allowed to get talaq or the divorce only verbally, triple talaq, and Modi has addressed that issue. So Modi is acting as a Mr. Closure to most of the difficult questions in Indian history. And Ayodhya is one of the most important questions that dominated Indian politics for the last 35 years, since 1981. I remember when I was 3-4 years old, I'm seeing Ayodhya from that time. And now that issue is no more.
Now that he has the courage, but you know, even to bring things to closure, it's to take a stand. Also, not to do everything and also to take a stand. Like, let's put things still, it's also to take a stand. What I'm saying is, like, even to take, like, the things to its closure, to its final destination, it's also a stand. Because if nothing happens, it means that the mosque is still standing. But now, I'm not sure, or we don't know what will happen next. So it's a stand.
Yes, so it and as a student of politics, what we say is, it depends on when you achieve the equilibrium. So does your status quo achieve the equilibrium, or does your end results achieve the equilibrium? Mm-hmm. If your status quo achieves the equilibrium, then it's government job to maintain the status quo. Mm-hmm. But if that is causing, if you have an issue, which is like Ayodhya issue, and that is causing tension between two communities after every 6 months, every 2 years, and that is being made an election issue after every 5 years, and that is impacting the community progress, then status quo is not helping. You need to have a final answer to that question.
I don't know, because like the slogan of the BJP, and not only the BJP, also the RSS during the election was Ayodhya Din Bas Janki Hai, Kashi Mathura Baki Hai. So it means like Kashi and Mathura will go next. I mean, it was like the slogan of them, that we are not going to stop only in Ayodhya. Like, it was intention to not only to resolve the dispute, but also to take back what it perceived to be ours of Hindus.
Okay, so let me give you a bigger context on that. Ayodhya, yes. So Ayodhya is Ayodhya movement comprised of multiple parties. It had BJP, RSS, but it also had different entities into it. BJP and RSS has never officially given any slogan as Ayodhya to chhapi hai, Kashi Mathura baki hai. They were only fighting on Ayodhya issue at that point of time. As soon as when Ayodhya verdict came out of Supreme Court, RSS chief came in and he said, they are not going to get involved in any of the issue for Mathura or Kashi. And he has reiterated his stand last month again, say that we are not going to get involved in the Gyanvapi mosque.
Well, he said more than that. He said, why escalate every fight? History should remain in history. No need to find shivling in every mosque.
Yes, that is correct, right? So, frankly, if we want to progress as a community, coherent community, we need to accept the facts. We cannot hide the facts or whitewash or put things under carpet and keep the animosity between each other and go ahead. We need to accept what happened 400 years back is wrong, and then only we can go ahead with the confidence in each other.
Me also think that it's really a bit problematic that the court, will decide and not the people what will happen with those temples according to history, according to religions, will take like a legal tools to establish that.
So court is an independent body. It has the regulations and laws at his disposal. It will interpret, and if it is not acceptable, people always have an option to go to the higher court in India. So none of the government, irrespective of Congress, BJP or Third Front, has influence courts. And I don't see anyone even making that claim outside India. So that's the first part. And the second part, which you rightly mentioned, there's no need to find out Shivalinga under each temple. So yeah, so when Mughals came to India, they purposefully demolished temples, and most of these temples were made mosque. There are thousands of temples. If you go to every city, you will see a temple like that, or you will see a mosque like that, and that is demolished. Do we want to go ahead with that? No. There are three places which are of the supreme importance to Hindu religion. Kashi, which is the place of Shiva. And it's the place of Shiva. It's also an ancient city, thousands and thousands of years old. It's a global heritage. Then last is Mathura, which is the birthplace of Krishna. And third is Ayodhya, which is the birthplace of Rama. So what these Hindu community organizations are asking is, give us the three places which are supreme importance to us, and then we leave everything else. We don't make a claim on anything else. I will go a step further on that. Now, Ayodhya was demolished, so that is gone. So there is no point in speaking about it. There is a big temple being built, which is also a historical course correction. But the other thing, which is Gyanvapi, acknowledge Gyanvapi is a Sanskrit name, or show an evidence that it's an Arabic name. So Gyanvapi is a Sanskrit, acknowledge Gyanvapi is a Sanskrit name, have acknowledged Aurangzeb demolished it, acknowledge there is a Shivalinga within Gyanvapi, acknowledge or put a board saying, yes, Aurangzeb demolished Gyanvapi, but now we are going to make this place as a place of communal harmony, where Hindu will also come and worship their own gods along with us.
Oh, this is what I'm saying. Like, court cannot, like, with its legal tools to establish that kind of mechanism. What he's deciding, as he's done in the Ayodhya case, is say, okay, this is the place of Ram. Let's destroy the mosque and rebuild like a Hindu temple. Like, I mean, a complicated solution, as you suggest, cannot be ruled by court, because the court is saying, okay, who is right, who is wrong, according to, you know, legal aspect. So
Ayodhya is even more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. There was a deity of Ram Lalla, or toddler Ram, in Ayodhya Babri Mosque. Entire issue was built around having that deity of Ram in the Babri Mosque. Then that mosque was not referred as mosque, but as referred as disputed structure by the parties. And then court affirmed the belief of Hindu community that Ram was born there. So it is a complicated case on which court has given a judgment. These things cannot be seen in a very black and white or binary manner, where there is a 50 shades of gray in the entire spectrum. So it's a very complicated case, with the Ram Lalla's deity getting to the place. And there is no case like that in Gyanvapi till now. But now the court has found a Shivalinga in Gyanvapi. So also, Babri was demolished when court gave this judgment. But now Gyanvapi mosque is still there. And none of the Hindu parties are asking to damage or demolish the current structure of Gyanvapi. They're just asking their right to free access and worship their own God.
So in your vision, what you're saying is like two communities praying in that place, not only the Muslim.
Yes. See, frankly, tell me one thing. Why... if there was an atrocity happened on one community, why you want to whitewash that atrocity? Rather, you would put that in front of your next generations, so next generations will learn from it and won't repeat the same mistakes. If Aurangzeb committed genocides, if Aurangzeb demolished temples, if Aurangzeb persecuted Hindus, if Aurangzeb put taxes on Hindus only because they were Hindus, then we should put that as an example which must not be followed by anyone in the future. We should put a big board in front of Kashi Vishwanath Gyanvapi Mosque saying, yes, this was a Hindu temple that was demolished by Aurangzeb. And then we should take a lesson from this history and live in communal harmony.
Do you will agree that in Ayodhya temple there will be a sign that says that in the past there was like a Muslim masjid there?
Actually, there is a sign that says there was a Hindu temple and that was demolished by Babur.
Okay.
Which is a fact.
Okay, but do you agree that it will be a sign that we will remind that, like, I don't know, not so many years, but like a respectable amount of years was like a message, Muslim message there. Did you agree to the same equivalent?
I would agree, but I would only agree if Muslim were praying in that mosque. If you know the history of Ayodhya, Muslims are not even praying in that mosque. So Muslims, if Muslims are not ready to call that as a mosque, why I am going to call that as a mosque, right?
Well, local
Muslims did not pray in that mosque for many years.
But
in Ayodhya.
Yeah, but it was like a place of great importance. It's true that they didn't pray because the government closed the place because of the riots in 1902. But I mean, it was
even before that. I think from 1950s, Muslim did not worship in that mosque.
And British closed it. But what I'm saying, it was important to them because it has like riots when thousands of people got killed. So you can't say that it's not a place that they have.
Yes. Let me clarify. Why something built by Babur, who was foreign invader, who came and had this first war with Indian Muslim rulers in India. So why someone as a foreign invader is so much important to Indian Muslims? They are, it's not their descent, their ancestor, right? So he was foreigner. He did exactly same atrocities on Hindus, but he did also atrocities on Muslims. So why Babur's mosque is so important for Indian Muslims? I don't think there is a place for Babur in Indian community, and same as Aurangzeb for Indian community.
It's like the right to self characterize yourself. I mean, you cannot establish for other people what's important to them or not. I mean, you could say, okay, it's brought from the outside, but it doesn't matter. After it happened, it's now a place of importance to Hindus, to the Muslim. Which brings me to the original place. You feel uncomfortable to put that sign for the Muslim.
Sorry, I didn't get that question.
I'm saying that you don't feel so comfortable to put in Ayodhya a sign that says that this place has like in that and so many years has like a Muslim message, Muslim mosque in that place.
Yes, I said that. So if you recognize that as a mosque, then only we can put a sign, right? If the first question is if we want to recognize that as a mosque.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But what brings me to the last point, that it's the attempt to resolve that kind of dispute by court will not give like peace to the communities. I mean, maybe the right way to do it is like it has been done in South Africa, to put like a forum which the leaders of the communities will sit down and establish like rules that will be acceptable of both sides, because now everyone is trying to establish things as comfortable or it's agreed upon him and not by the other side.
Yes, and that worked in South Africa because there were not so many denominations as in India. If you even look at Hindus group, there are 100 denominations, and everyone comes with their own opinion, and each one of their opinion might not be the exactly opposite, but vastly different than the other. Same thing with Indian Muslims. They also have multiple denominations, and they also come with their different opinion. So it's difficult for having a community. So it's not like there is one solution for this, or there is only one body that can solve this. It needs to be a combined effort by community leaders, by government, by judiciary, by law enforcement, coming together, having right checks and balances, appointing right people, appointing right negotiators and interlocutors to find a common way. I'll tell you an example. In Atal Bihari Vajpayee's government, in BJP's first government, Arun Jaitley was law minister, and he was negotiating this Ayodhya dispute at a very large extent. And at even some point, they were about to reach a consensus. So ultimately, that did not happen. But I think that is also a way where government-backed or government-controlled negotiation can also take place. But there is not, what I'm saying is there is no one kind of fixed way to reach this point. It needs to be a combination of different mechanisms.
Okay. I think it's a good point to end it in an optimistic way, that maybe the dispute can be solved not only by court, and in some places, at least, maybe a government can resolve and to settle like a different mechanism to settle the dispute. So both sides came out happy.
It's a definitely optimistic way, and I'll say why. India, or the ancient India, was invaded by foreign invaders for 2,500 years. Greek came, Shak, Kukan, Hushad, Hushad, everyone came. And then they came and they assimilated within India. So one of the Greek king, his name was Menander, he came to India, he accepted Buddhism, and he became a king Milind. So it's a place where everyone comes and lives, and then they became part of the larger civilization. It's not me, but person who wrote Pakistan National Anthem, Allama Iqbal, wrote long back that, I'll say the translation, where Greece, Rome, and Egypt civilizations were washed away, but India is a civilization that has flourished for thousands of years. So if a person who wrote Pakistan's national anthem can write that, then I'm very sure these things can happen. And if you look at the larger time scale of few thousand years of Indian history, then few 50 years and 100 years of conflict are not big things. These things happen, but ultimately just a part of larger civilization.
Yes. Definitely, as a Jew, I can identify with what you said.
Yes, absolutely. I can imagine that.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Kiran. It was really interesting, really, 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 really mind-blowing to talk with you about all these things. I appreciate your time. And thank you. Thank you for your effort. Thank you, Kiran.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.